For August the 21st, 2020, we talk about Remnant from the Ashes, the feud between Epic, Apple, and Google, and we ask you, what moment made you fall in love with a particular game? Welcome to Level 341. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. Welcome back, David.
Yo.
Yeah, David. Welcome.
I love how accusatory that is. Yeah, nice to see you.
It's been a while.
Well. Look who
Look who decided to pod in.
Yeah.
Like, we've got you trapped and you can't just hit the hang up button.
Oh man, I wish I had those powers, but no, I can't.
There's the next Black Mirror.
What if one day could stop you from logging off? Yeah.
Oh, no.
how's it going, no one
in the World of Warcraft notices.
Oh yeah,
yeah. it would have to be Black Mirror. It would have to have some much too literal interpretation of the term ghosting.
Oh geez, how you doing, David?
Yeah, bobbing and weaving,
of course.
Yeah, as you do. Man, trying to think, what I've been up to in this world we find ourselves in when, you know, time does not exist.
Right. When every day is the same. Yeah. I see people complain about that. Like, oh, every day is the same. And that wasn't the case for everybody before this. It's very weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Yeah, I know. My big complaint is just like not being able to do any sparring or like any martial arts that actually involves other people is really really tough.
Right.
We just need to invent killer robots for you to spar against.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I really want to get, if I could find some place I could source the like pneumatics from pinball flippers. I want to use some of those to power like a stick dummy to practice blocking.
Man found dead in his apartment today.
what you guys are describing is the boxing robot that the Russian boxer from Rocky 4 or 5 his name. Ivan Drago. It's Ivan Drago's training droid that he destroys. Hey, David, please don't build an Ivan Drago training droid. That's a thing. If you could be sure that the thing you built would never kill you, that's one thing, but we're not, this isn't an Asimov book, so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That breaks apart pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I feel like pinball flippers, like that, there's not a lot of force in
that. It's just a start, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just gonna keep on building up.
It's a real slippery slope.
Yeah.
In reality, you are training the robot.
Yeah. Then boom, guess what? Bicentennial Man, sleeping with your daughter.
Is that what happens in the plot of Bicentennial Man? I never saw it.
I think that Bicentennial Man joins the house as a robot butler, and I think that he falls in love with a daughter who grows up to match him in age, and then he starts replacing his parts with human parts.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I only ever saw Bicentennial Man once. Probably literally 24 years ago.
I'm not going to confirm this and go back and watch it.
So. Yeah, no, I'd recommend.
Is this a horror movie?
No, it's supposed to be like a real life affirming, like a real life affirming, like a sci-fi romance kind of thing where... Wait,
but he has to source the human parts from somewhere.
It cuts that part out. It omits that part.
There's Kruger from Archer just in real life in this movie.
Yes.
It cuts that not part an out and it doesn't show it in the movie.
Right. So yeah. Like the scenes where he would go and do that, all it did was it just flashed up a URL to the website where you could go and look at the cut parts. Literally the parts that he cut off of people, but also the the cut parts, you know.
So it's a horror movie in the parts that they cut.
Right.
The rest is a romantic comedy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
It's because the studio got real upset with what he decided to do to the Pepsi girl. Literally, the daughter in Bicentennial Man, when she's at her youngest, the actress who plays her is the Pepsi girl.
Remember that? Oh, I thought you were gonna say whatever. No. Jenner got panned for doing that Pepsi commercial where she solves the world's problems with a brand product.
Yeah, when she gives a pop to the cops to stop the very generic protest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I feel like if it had been booze, I mean, booze kind of does solve most of the world's problems.
Well, it causes a lot of them too.
And creates. Yeah.
Hence the famous Simpsons quote. The beer, the cause and solution to all of life's problems. Report back to us on how that goes if you can. Mm-hmm. And if you do it in video, blink twice if the robot is holding you hostage. Yeah. Fair. Yeah. Now
last track, who's going to report back about the plot of Bicentennial Man to us?
Probably a listener. Like there are probably some Bicentennial Man super fans.
Some Bicentennial bystanders.
Yeah, some Bi-Man soup fans. So they'll probably keep us honest there. Now I'm sitting here and like I've got a bunch of like floss picks because I'm going to the dentist tomorrow. I always keep floss picks at my desk. I'm going to the dentist tomorrow and I need you guys to assure me that I will be okay.
I did it a couple months ago. It was a very reassuring experience because it's like, oh, everyone here is acting like a grown ass adult about this. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Also,
so like
you learn that you still have teeth. So yeah, that's comforting. Yeah,
true. Yeah,
you can never be too sure of that until you go to the dentist.
Yep. Oh,
wait a second, these are marker caps.
It's more common than you think. Yeah, I just like, you know, I'm real paranoid after I stopped going to the dentist for a while and had to have that tooth replaced. I had that root canal. I'm real paranoid about skipping those appointments now, but like also you know, it's going, you know, you've got people up in your face. They could be a vector for COVID possibly. But I've got no idea. There's nothing that assures me it's going to be any better in 3 or 6 months. And I have no idea, in fact, if it's going to be worse. So like I need to do it even though I'm scared.
You should just preemptively cough on everyone else. That way, if you get it, you think maybe, hey, I already had it and I just gave it back to myself.
Mind over matter. Or,
yeah. Or maybe if you have antibodies, then you'll like cure everybody else. This is what I heard on Modern News. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm running through a scenario in my mind. I'm genuinely curious how people would answer. If you could have the dentist do their thing via like a remote robot arm. Would you opt in?
I wouldn't be the first person to do that.
I'll be the second person in that bloodstained chair.
No. Yeah, I mean,
Cole, if you could have Bicentennial Man be the dentist, what would you do?
I was also going to say that's Ivan Drago's only... dentist. Yeah.
Only if he already had gotten the human teeth.
Right. I don't want to help them source those bad boys. Yeah.
So I do have to say, like, I do feel like for maybe not for the diagnosis or if I need a root canal, but I feel like for the cleaning or something like that, like that's something probably a robot could do, or like that's something you could probably outsource to, like, you know, a fairly talented like I don't know, what do we have nowadays? Do we have artisans?
Like, well, I mean, they're dental hygienists. It's actually a really good job if you can get it.
Like, right. No, I just mean, like, you probably don't even need to know dentistry. Like, someone that was, like, fairly handy, you know, probably could, you know, do the cleaning your teeth part at least, right?
Yeah. I mean, so it used to be, like, what, barbers who did the extraction? Yeah. That's no, the hygienist is just a dental snitch. Like, they go in and they're, like, scraping stuff off. They see, oh boy, here this is. Then they run to the dentist and say, "You need, hey, look what he has, look what I." And then they get a.
You tell them snitches get stitches.
And then they say, "No, you get stitches because we're gonna have to pull out all of your teeth because you stopped coming here for 10 years." Oh Jesus, I've been talking for too long here, Dennis.
Have I told you my story with our teeth pulled?
No.
You woke up. You started yanking out the IVs, right?
No, that was a different story. I do not go down for, like, general anesthesia if I can help it because it does not.
I got a question. Were they your IVs or other people's IVs?
someone activated your IVs. Kill phrase.
Oh, man.
You know, every so often you go Manchurian candidate. No, I've actually had a grand total of 15 teeth.
Jesus.
Pulled. Whoa.
Wow. Okay.
How many baby?
Those would have been, let's see here, 9 baby teeth, 2 adult teeth because they didn't fit in my mouth, and then 4 wisdom teeth.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So you basically are Bicentennial Man. You are more.
your jaws now.
He's opposite Bicentennial Man.
Yeah,
he's losing all his parts.
I do have to say, like, one of the things I really wish is that there's a procedure where you could just go and they would replace all your teeth with, like, titanium or something and, like, skip all of this nonsense.
Yeah. It's called a grill.
No, that's just like a, it's like a mouthpiece. Like literally, it's just like
not
a,
if you
like...
do it right. Come on.
I know. Have you ever seen, like, the any of this stuff? Like, there's several traditional societies. I want to say maybe it's in, like, one of the subculture isn't the right word, but you know what I mean, in, like, India or somewhere, that they basically do, like, the grill thing where they'll you know, coat their teeth with gold. Oof. And it's just, it's crazy looking because it's, you know, you'll see, like, you know, this little old lady in, like, traditional, you know, like a garb, you know, like a robe type thing, but with, like, all gold teeth.
I don't know that I'd want to put a very valuable thing in my mouth that somebody could, like, kill me and take is the thing.
Yeah. I know. Maybe it's just like, it's a challenge. It's like, come and take it, you know?
Well, honestly, it's the ultimate hipster move. You know how, like, you know, the best coffee filters are gold mesh because it's a superconductor. It'll keep everything pure. Well, if you really want the right coffee experience, you need gold-plated teeth so you don't mess it up while drinking as well.
Yeah. I don't know that stands to reason. I think that tooth enamel would be less reactive than any metal.
Mm.
Yeah.
I defer to the man in Seattle.
I need to do more research. I'm already starting Bicentennial Man in the background, so this is going to have to go on the stack.
Oh, man. How are you, Dennis?
I'm great. I just want to keep on talking about teeth. And Cole, it made me realize at the very top that the number of different styles of day to keep people happy is exactly 2. You need a weekend and a week. And just take one of those away and everyone freaks out per the other thing. So.
Wait, what?
way calling back to the start of the conversation.
Oh, every day being the same. Yeah,
this is the last episode we will have published before Deck of Wonders goes live on Kickstarter.
Nice.
So that's super exciting. I'm going public with our 48-hour funding goal. So if Deck of Wonders funds in 48 hours or less, everyone who backs, regardless of when, gets the full digital art book. If you haven't seen, this game is very heavy on art. It's beautiful, done by Lauren Brown, and is just really, really cool. So you will get all of that in an art book if this funds in 48. So here we go.
Nice. When does that campaign start?
That is August 25th.
August 25th. Okay.
Yeah. There's a VIP launch party on Facebook where you can get, entered to win a free copy of the game if that's mm-hmm. your bag, just by showing up there. And yeah, it's exciting times. I'm feeling relatively prepared, which means I probably haven't encountered the giant thing that'll freak me out yet. So we'll see.
I mean, you've been putting in a lot of work for it.
Yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks, but I'm just excited to have it out there. Yeah. And you cross that point where it's like, okay, you know, every extra 5 minutes I have, I can make this 5 minutes better. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you just need that deadline. Not because there's any inherent value in the date of the 25th, but just because it's like, okay, that is a point where I'm going to say good enough.
Yes.
And good enough right now feels pretty damn good. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that rules. I am looking forward to that, and we will blast it out there on network channels too. Yeah. Cool. Ben, how are you?
I am doing fine. I think I said this before the recording. I didn't do anything over the weekend. I had a busy week last week, so I had a nice like veg out weekend, and I played some video games.
Nice.
Which is useful for this time.
Yeah, especially useful for this show. And I think mm-hmm. this week we're going to do the regular kind of show. We've got the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. That segue made it sound like I was going to go to you, Ben, but David, because you were not here last time, I will go to you first. What's up? What you been playing?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Got back into Warframe, actually.
They put out new content, right?
So they have announced new content, so okay. I'm kind of getting in, kind of getting prepared for that sort of thing. The big thing I've been grinding on is basically unlocking, doing the faction grind for my fourth, faction. They call them syndicates in the game. Mm-hmm. No relation to, the video game syndicate. The kind of weird thing with this is each of the factions are ally. There's, are paired up. So there's one faction they're allied with, one faction that they hate. And so any faction gain you get with them is subtracted from that faction, and one mm-hmm. faction they're just kind of all right with, so you lose 50% of any faction you gain from that faction.
Right.
So the end result is like when you're trying to get your third and fourth faction, it basically ends up being like you have to abuse that system to like get some faction here and then raise it over there so that you can keep everything balanced.
Huh. Real dog and pony show to keep everyone happy with you.
Right, exactly. Except in this case, the dog and pony show involves, killing thousands of people.
Yeah. Well, they like factions by default, if you're not gaming the system, will eventually get pissed off enough at you to start sending assassins, right?
Right, exactly.
So you gotta dig yourself out of a deep hole if you want everyone to like you.
So basically where I'm at now is like four of the factions I'm at like max rank with love me, and then two of the factions like regularly send assassins after me.
Okay. Huh. So I mean like the end result of this, what it sounds like if you max with all of them is that it would ultimately get back to zero?
I'd have to see. I'm not sure if it would be possible to get any more of the factions up. Or at the very least, it would just be incredibly tedious to get the last two.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, I'm fairly happy with it. The two remaining factions that don't like me, one is like the hyper capitalist faction, And then one is like the sort of Earth nativist faction.
Okay.
Same thing.
So,
I said same thing, right?
Eh, they're allies with each other, anyways. Yeah. So I am happy with allied with the two factions that are fairly overtly good, and then two factions that are kind of give the side eye to.
Okay.
But yeah. So the main reason that though is that actually gets me a end game version of my favorite gun, which is the Bolter, which is more or less like the nail gun in Quake. So, you know, fully automatic and pins enemies to walls.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I just, at this point, the idea of an end game in Warframe does not do justice to the game. Like, we need something that is beyond end game to describe what they're into now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the game does go pretty off the rails with, like, they basically took the approach of, like, we're just not going to bother to cap how how difficult it can be or how powerful you can get.
So it's balanced.
Yeah. So, yeah, other than that, messing around some with my Kuva Lich, which is basically the game's equivalent of the Shadow of War Nemesis system.
Okay.
So right now that's mainly just grinding. You kind of have this Assassin's Creed style hidden blade, but you have to figure out the right kind of space poison to put on it to permanently kill the lich, because just like you, when it dies, it just comes back to life.
Okay.
So yeah, nothing in this game actually makes any sense whatsoever, but it's all very stylish and cool.
Them working liches into this thing that I previously thought was sci-fi is quite strange.
Yeah, it's I mean, one of the factions is basically like like space clones, and so it kind of gets into some of that of just like the weird like hyper cloning stuff, but yeah, no, it makes very little sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, the only other thing is I downloaded the demo for Factorio, and have been playing through the tutorial, or I guess maybe it's a tutorial.
get off the show.
I like it. I allow it.
He can stay. It's fine.
You've been playing too much West or Kingdom of Loathing.
I don't quite know what to think of it so far, because I don't know, it's really weird because its initial thing comes across like very, I don't know, almost like World of Warcraft approach to crafting of like, oh yeah, the way you mine is totally to see some rocks lying on the ground and like hit them with a pickaxe. That's how mining works.
Mm-hmm. It's not.
And I've just gone into, like, I think I completed the tutorial that does the very, very basics of, like, hey, here's what a conveyor belt is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I'm assuming
that's important.
Yeah, I'm assuming at some point things kind of open up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, like, you are going to be progressing up a tech tree. You know, okay. So like eventually you're going to, you know, it's actually like a pretty satisfying rhythm where like right as you are reaching the extent of what one kind of power plant can do for you, you will find the ability to like mine or harvest the thing that you need to set up a new one. So it's almost like you're kind of like cascading up through these weird interlocking tiers that are kind of open for you. Yeah. So it does open up, you know, to a certain extent, but you are, you know, because your goal is ultimately the same, you know, to maximize, and optimize, you know, you are going to be kind of like progressing, you know, kind of along the same path that a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff will, you know, that everybody else is going to be progressing along. It's just going to be up to you to figure out what the most effective way to do that is.
Okay.
David, you're building a CPU and they're showing you what the logic gates are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say is what got me thinking about this is there was a article that kind of made a splash in the developer community this week that was basically arguing that Factorio or I don't know. There's so many names and they all are games like this and they all have dumb names.
You're saying the names weren't satisfactory?
Yeah, exactly. Factorio is basically teaches you or is an abstraction of software engineering in terms of the idea that like a lot of the core gameplay is dealing with the idea of like technical debt. So like, do I build this right or do I build this for right now?
Oh, okay.
And then
I'm going to have to go in and uproot it later.
Right, exactly. And making those trade-offs. And then also things like, you know, if I need a certain advanced resource. So like the example this game uses is, or this article uses is circuitry. I build a like circuitry production hub everywhere I need it or in one place and then just route things
shipping
like do I keep my code dry or not?
Yeah, you know, do I worry that this might be a bottleneck or do I try and keep this easy to parse visually?
Yeah And then there's also some interesting discussion. People talk about like, if that's the case and you're a programmer in your day job, like why are you playing this game when you're not working? And
cause it's fun.
Well, So people argue that this was basically what programming would be like without any of the dealing with like having to deal with like business teams and product owners that like come in and just, cause problems for you, which I argued, what do you think the aliens are?
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I don't know that I get that I fully buy into the, oh, if you do this all day during the day, why would you come home and do an abstracted, like no stakes version of this? Probably a kind of problem solving that you like doing anyway.
Wait, right. I feel that way with Zachtronic games, but I don't feel that way with Factorio.
Yeah, well, and that's actually, there's actually a lot of interesting discussion of it, because, like, I very much feel that way with Zachtronic's games, and for me, a lot of it is Zachtronic's games are basically concentrated, in my opinion, like, all of the bad parts of programming.
Ouch.
in terms of like, to me, programming is all about abstraction. And the whole conceit of the Zachtronics games is like programming where you're not able to have any abstraction. Which I like isn't necessarily bad. It's just like it's the part, there's like two elements of kind of two things that makes programming challenging, and it focuses on the one I don't like.
Yeah.
What are the two things?
I would say figuring out proper abstractions and dealing with situations where you can't have abstractions.
Yeah. Okay. I think that like the way that I would think about it, because I am more in the Factorio side of this than the Zachtronics side of it. It's like, Factorio is for people who, again, I'm not a programmer. I suck at this. Caveat. This is just the way I understand it. Factorio is for somebody who is really into, the syntax of coding and anything regarding or anything that Zytronics puts out, it seems to me that like it's more about the semantics of it, like actually right. building the figuring out kind of what the individual discrete parts are.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The other things people kind of, the other way some people described it, particularly with Factorio, is that it's not necessarily an abstraction of programming. It's an abstraction of software engineering. So it's an abstraction of like how you manage programming, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'll throw another analogy on the heap. I think Zachtronics Games is like trying to increase performance in a program. And Factorio is kind of like playing with Legos. Right?
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah. I hit a ceiling in Factorio where I really appreciated the intricacy of it. However, mm-hmm. like there were certain things, just kind of like little rough edges that, like if I had the time and I had the energy to look into learning them, but like little rough edges just about like where an arm would like load from and unload from, like mm-hmm. you know, just like, okay, so I've got a resource pile here, I have, you know, a place I want it to go, I have the arm and I have the I have a hopper and a conveyor belt, like how many squares apart do these need to be, why isn't this mm-hmm. machine working? And then I would find out that I was pointing this thing in the wrong direction, it was off by one tile, or like mm-hmm. there was something, you know, just like a space that was necessary that I didn't leave there. And mm-hmm. all that it does is remind me of the time I spent probably a whole week during finals week when I was studying computer science, like banging my head against a wall because my code wouldn't compile, and then finding out that it was because it was literally
the thing or something.
No, it was literally just a greater than like a greater than mistaken for a less than is really what it ultimately ended up being. Yeah. Something that the compiler wouldn't catch.
But
I was a freshman. I was learning C++ and Visual in Microsoft Visual Basic.
Yeah, that's a rough lot.
Yeah,
I don't blame you for leaving computer science with that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that is something that I ran into. But I have seen, like, I've looked at, you know, the factory designs that people have put out, they look amazing, especially in motion, you know?
Yeah, that's when I kind of checked out of the game. It's like, I made it like maybe a good third or halfway through the game. And then like, I started watching YouTube videos and people were like, this is like the perfect like coal factory production or whatever. And they like showed a blueprint of it. It's like optimize everything. And it's like, well, I'm never going to do anything that good. So I might as well quit.
So would I be interested to see, I don't know if they have developed this or if they will or anything, is if they could figure out a way to put in tools to allow you to analyze that sort of things and figure it out without it just being like, you know, here's the solution. But like, you know, put in some sort of tools that would allow you to somehow like visualize, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah, almost like a heat map or an overlay or something.
Yeah, something that just highlights the worst bottleneck at any given time.
Like, this is like, that's something that like SimCity games, or, you know, specifically like City Skylines, has like different overlay views that will help you like troubleshoot traffic.
Problems. Or even like the ability to like, do almost like a step through time mode where, so that you could see, you know, indistinct increments, you know. How does, you know, my coal move through this machine? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, human resource machine and 7 billion humans, or 7 billion people or whatever, I forget what that one is called. They have that as well, where you're stepping through the routines.
I gotta imagine there's like a real strong mod game for Factorio, Satisfactory.
Oh yeah.
Things.
Yeah. There definitely is.
I wonder if that's in there somewhere.
I'm just always impressed with how much they can render in Factorio, because it's like, if you zoom way out, it's like these are thousands of resources moving around custom conveyor belts, and like everything's getting rendered and updated correctly. Yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest to see, like I said, I've found I really like at least some of the games that are kind of adjacent to that, particularly in like... Um, oh, um, Subnautica and No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of trying to explore this space. I'm going to be interested to see if I, you know, find a certain sub niche of this that's kind of my thing or what.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we're playing in the same space. I don't know if I would encourage you to look into management sims because I that might not be like specific or crunchy enough for what you want. But like that, sure. Like it sounds like it's a flavor of that almost.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Nice. Factorio still bearing fruit, which is a weird thing to say about a game about machines on a barren alien planet.
It's still a factor
that you're actively poisoning.
Yeah. Did you have anything else, David?
Nope. That's it.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got the same two that I got last week. I've continued playing Fall Guys. It continues to be pretty fun. I think I'm at like maybe 5 crowns or so. So I'm that doing way. Decent.
Nice.
Some of them are justified wins. Some of them are other people completely messing up and I'll be like, all right, I guess I'll take the win.
Thanks, bro.
But
that's game's entirely within the spirit of the game.
Yeah. There's one final game where it's like something that everybody's new, like always messes this up. But there's one game where there's a giant crown at the end of this like race and whoever jumps and grabs onto it first wins. Everybody forgets the grab part. So you see like occasionally you see people just like face plant into this crown, fall down on a conveyor that takes them away from it. Yeah. And so, yeah.
So I feel like from what I hear, this game, it's like, you know, Mario Kart has the blue shell. You know, mm-hmm. And in terms of like to always remind you that this is a game that is not about being precise and meritocracy. I feel like Fall Guys is a game where the entire game is a blue shell.
I think it's more the team games seem to be the blue shell of this game.
Okay.
Have you run into the yellow team problem when you play?
I think that's a meme that has arisen out of the game than anything that's like actual factually.
Yeah, I don't know what this is.
Everyone just says that the yellow team's garbage, including the developers of the game. So.
They have the data. They know. So I also played about an hour of this last Friday or something like that. Had a lot of fun, but I'm playing it on PS4. I should get it on PC.
No!
So we can. All right. And I like it. So I like it's free on PS4 if you have PS Plus. So I don't mind buying it on PC to be able to play it with more people. It's really fun. But like the first draw that I got, like the first you know game that I played, I think I got to like a place like in the top quarter. I broke the top 15, which was fun, but every game after that, I ended up on, ended up getting undone by a team game, that was thrown into the middle of it. And, it felt like when I was yellow, I kept dying in the, you know, so like, let's say I went through 5 different rounds of this playing for about an hour. it's like I played yellow half the time. Both those times I lost very badly because I felt like red and blue ganged up on me. And when I was red and blue, I felt like I immediately went for yellow.
This game is taking on a new life and this is actually happening in the meta.
I had no idea. Like I never saw that. The first time I saw anything about that meme was like an article on Polygon Today, I think. Mm-hmm. Today or yesterday, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of like weird small things with the game. So I haven't noticed that sort of thing yet, or I haven't noticed like people ganging up on yellow yet. Mm-hmm. I know that that's kind of the joke. I think maybe part of it could come from, I'm not sure if this happens all the time, but I've definitely noticed it where when you're playing the Rocket League minigame, which is like the people soccer game, I think a lot of times yellow gets the bad tiebreak on that one where they're a man down compared to the blue team.
Okay.
But this is just from like recent memory. I haven't, you know, written down data for this, so I'm not sure if this is 100% true or not. Mm-hmm. There's another few things that are interesting about the game too. So kind of the other development that's happening in the game is people are being more aggressive in some of the games. So at the beginning it's very much like at the beginning of the game's meta is very much like Ultimate Extreme Elimination Challenge, where bunch of people running, falling over, looking silly or whatever. Mm-hmm. But now it's getting to the point that some of the people are really good at where they can like stand in certain points of the level and try and like grab or push people off at certain points to like eliminate them. And it's getting a little bit brutal in some levels sometimes.
just like somebody
that
like,
almost seems kind of unfortunate just because that seems like that kind of subverts what the game, what makes the game kind of interesting and, you know, fun.
I mean, it's also inevitable, right? Anytime there's a system, degenerate play is going to, you know, arise within it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely something they need to keep in mind as they're evolving the game, is to try and minimize times where somebody can do something like that.
Yeah. I wonder if when they go to different seasons later on, if they're going to sub out broken games and bring in ones that are like resistant to some of the strategies that people develop.
Yeah, and I think they're definitely making like small changes. Like there's one mini game I can think of called Block Party, which is where you're like standing on this giant rectangular grid and these like blocks will come up randomly that'll swipe across the grid, and so you have to run out of their way, otherwise they'll like swipe you off and you land in the danger goo that can kill you. And then there's like some where you like specifically need to jump over and stuff. But the patterns that they have for that, like they've introduced new ones like as time has gone on. Like there's been a recent one in the last week or something that I had not seen before that. I think they're making small tweaks like that. But yeah, it will be interesting. And they've added one new final game, I think last Friday maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's like very similar to previous games that they had. It's like a combination of maybe two of the games.
I feel like one interesting way and easy way to handle this would just be add a survivor style vote off the island.
Yeah, but if they eliminate a bunch of people, they can't vote for that guy.
Yeah.
Or girl.
Just let everyone vote.
Okay.
It's at the end of the thing. So you stick around and watch it.
They could do stuff too, or they could maybe like track how many people are grabbing other people and that sort of thing. And try and like just put bad apples with other bad apples sort of thing. Maybe there's things that they could do for sure. The other development in the game is hacking is popping up every now and then. It's not all over the place, but I've experienced in at least like two different games, I think, where there's like one where somebody, it's like they had a turbo, it's like they had a Magcax controller, but they had a button that we didn't have access to.
Okay.
They could just like sprint way faster than any other people.
That's so good.
And then one was like very, very blatant, where it's that Block Party game that I was talking about before, where basically somebody was just their character was floating around and then like specifically like ramming in people to try and knock them off as they were like jumping over these things or moving out of the way of platforms. And so it's like, I have no idea how they do that or what the mod or the hack is for it, but that part's a little bit annoying. So you just kind of have to quit out of those games and cut your losses.
So
but
is that a problem on the PS4 version or the console versions?
I don't know.
I've not run into it. Then again, I've not played very much of it, so I have no idea. Unless there's crossplay, it seems unlikely.
I can't remember if I mentioned this last week. Did I talk about how they did away with the username tags?
Yes, because people were running arbitrary HTML. Tags. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they can't handle that, then I don't know if they're going to be able to handle like cheaters on PC at least.
But yeah.
I feel like. Wouldn't the better solution be to just sanitize your inputs?
Yeah,
I mean, I think that they took down the name tags until they figured out what to do.
Okay,
but they have not posted anything else. Yeah,
right.
They took down the name tags, put everyone as Fall Guy 4-digit number, and they haven't changed anything since that. And that was like maybe a week and a half ago.
So yeah,
they could just be focusing on other things for now.
So speaking of things they need to focus on, I watched Big Hero 6 this week with the kids. Which first
I
off,
really
amazing
that.
Movie.
That looks good.
Oh yeah, I mean it's old, so it's easy to find, and really really good. Second off, we need a Baymax Fall Guy now.
Oh, I see.
Let's see the balloon bot.
So it's like once you see it, you can't unsee it. And it's just a bunch of Baymaxes running around.
what kind of outfit are you rocking on your Fall Guy, Ben?
So I have metallic paint, which you can unlock once you get to a high enough level with lightning bolts, is a decent go-to for me. I also have one where it's like a creamsicle, like it's like a almost like a candy cane like swirl. Mm-hmm. And I do the creamsicle colors for it. Both okay. are just very attractive. Don't need any like toppers or any of that. But yeah, I want to get the can of soda for sure, but I've not gotten that yet.
Is this like your like a can of soda mascot?
It's like your, so for people who don't know, the way you can customize your characters, you have decals. So it's like you have a pattern and you have a color palette, two color palette. And each of those, you kind of unlock things independently of one another. And then on top of that, you have like a topper and a bottomer of like what your character can wear. And it's essentially like almost like a company mascot like thing, like something that you might see as like somebody outside of like a restaurant or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're like customizable and there's cool mixing and matching of those. So you,
the first game that I played, I saw somebody in a hot dog suit and I was like, I don't know how long I'm going to play this game, but I'm going to get that goddamn hot dog suit.
Level 26 is where you get the bottom part of it. 22 is where you get like the top.
So, really? Yeah. You can't just like get that randomly when the story refreshes?
Nope.
Oh,
gotta work for it. Okay. Gotta earn that hot dog suit.
Well, I said it. I said I was going to get the hot dog suit.
And you can wear like a cute, like a burnt red, like suit under it and get like a red face or whatever to blend in. It's adorable.
Yeah.
So is the for the bottom with the lightning bolts, is that called the power bottom?
With the one that I wear, I don't have like any of the toppers or bottomers or whatever, but it's just like the suit pattern and the color. It's minimalistic.
Yeah,
because it's classy design.
Yeah, I was happy that I was able to get the bottom texture of the the underwear with the hearts on it.
Yeah. There's like a fun meta too, where it's like the starting uniform you have is just like a blank red one. So it's like Star Trek, where literally the people who die first are the red shirts. But then the next level after that is a lot of people wear the wolf costume because that's like the first one you get. Mm-hmm. So that's like where you can spot a lot of beginners at the game. It's just like sort of pushing off the wolves.
It's the reverse of feeding them to the wolves. I would love to have it where you can like see what everyone else is wearing and change your costume accordingly, like, you know, before you have to lock it in, because I think you have to lock it in from the main menu. And you get a weird like hipster meta where everyone's trying to be different, so they're
you're not gonna show up. Oh damn it, there are two hot dogs here.
They're wearing the same outfit.
I just want from like the first game I've seen, it seems like the one I always see, just the like charging down the thing and like you have to choose which of the three doors you think are gonna be open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just, for that, really want, like, everyone in a bull costume so we can recreate the running of the bulls.
Oh,
yeah. There's a couple games like that where literally you call the people, like, the horde and stuff. Because, like, we'll talk about, like, oh, yeah, I got ran over by the horde. I got trampled. You know, so that's how I, like, ended up in the back or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a weird thing with that game, too, where at least on the last row of three doors, you can differentiate the false doors from the one that's not false.
What?
The non-false one is slightly lower than the other two. And you can tell on that one specifically, because when they do the opening of the game, they do like a back angle shot. Or like they do the camera like going down to the bottom. And you can like kind of tell it there. I don't know if you can do it for every row or not, but I've like consistently done that and it's always worked. So it's like just like an interesting thing where it's like I don't think people have caught on to that in the meta at least, but that's like a fun fact.
That seems like something they would fix.
Yeah, but you know, different things. I don't know,
I mean, there's still enough randomness in that trying to get through. That's a nice little adding a tiny element of skill or at least observation to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's the first thing.
Yeah,
it's like you got to be the first person to the row three to take advantage of in the first place, and that's already kind of hard to do. So
yeah,
the game's fun. I think it's a lot of fun to play with other people. It's great to play while on Discord, just like hanging out and talking with people, and then it's like also really easy where you can always spectate on people already anyway. But like someone accidentally leaves or something, you can like stream the game so other people can watch it too while you're on Discord. So that's nice.
Yeah. That's cool. Like, is there a way to like do party play and get into the same game with each other? Or
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I you can probably do it on the PlayStation too. But yeah, you invite friends to your party or whatever, and you're already up and playing the same lobby.
Gotcha.
And then that seems pretty abusable.
Well, so it's that's what I was going to talk about with the team games, is that's like how you mitigate the team game issue, is if you play with a party of four people and they're all like relatively good or whatever, and you can communicate with them.
So will you always be guaranteed to get on the same team?
Yeah, you're always on the same team with people you party up with.
Yeah. That puts you at a real disadvantage if you're not doing party play.
Well, it depends. It depends if you're on a team with teams.
Well, or it depends if your team's any good.
Yeah. So that at least mitigates it, I feel like, because that way, like, you're not going to get blown out of the water if you're playing with like three other people who are like pretty good. So, yeah. Any other questions about Fall Guys?
I don't have any. I guess I want to like ask you real quick. Sure. What do you think of the memory tile mini game? Because I hate the Indiana Jones one.
Perfect match.
Yeah, perfect. The Indiana Jones one is actually pretty fun. I like that. We can describe what that one goes. No, I'm talking about the one where it's like you're on like a 4x4 grid of tiles, and it flashes like images of fruit. And on the individual squares. And then you have to like memorize which fruit was where. So when it flashes the answer, you have to go to the tile that has that fruit hidden underneath it. Or else you're going to drop and die. I hate it. It feels like homework, and it feels so, it feels way too different compared to everything else.
Just stand in the middle, don't even pay attention to it, and then when it drops to zero and shows a picture, just go where everyone else goes, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, but then I don't want to like accidentally trust a dipshit.
Well, that's why you don't go where one person is, you go where like 10 people are.
Yeah.
Because they're not all going to be dipshits.
Okay.
Some of them might.
But unless there's a team, in which case the team could, wins.
We tried to do this as a team. It's tried to fake people out, and it's like not a profitable strategy because you usually mess up and like fall off.
Yeah,
like in the trying to like juke or whatever.
Yeah, well, you can knock people off yourself. So
yeah. So I think the game makes more sense when you're being a bully, because it's like, all right, I'm not going to pay attention to whatever the images are on the ground. I'm just going to try and like push people off or whatever. And then when it comes time to get on a square, I'm just going to go to where everyone's going, and like that'll be fine anyway. And like I didn't need to pay attention at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like of all the mini games, that's definitely on the bottom like quarter, I think, in quality, just because it doesn't really get people out at all either. And so it's kind of like a useless like minute or two. I think the opposite of that, on the other end of the spectrum, Slime Climb is one of my favorite mini games, and basically it's like. So race is like a sub theme of the game. That's sort of like one of the categories of the competitions. It's like the door game that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Or there's some where it's like there's a bunch of spinny platforms or.
I thought you were going to say there were some really deep, overtones about our current climate and everything.
No, it's not like that. This is a place you go to escape all that business.
What were you saying about the yellow team?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm going to briefly get sniped by your guys' comments about that to talk about that, and then I'll go back to the main main branch. But I think people are kind of like, I think it's a meme that's arisen from the game. I don't think there's lot of actual legitimacy around it. However, if people start as a meta, start bullying the yellow team because of the meme,
right?
Then it will turn into an actual problem, which will be funny. But anyway, back to Slime Climb, an example of a game I really like in the game is there's types of races, but it has an added element of it's like vertical. You're going on a race that's slowly going higher and higher, and the finish line's at the top. And there's this rising slime that'll eventually rise to the very top. And if you land in it, you get eliminated. Mm-hmm. And so there's like a pressure of you have to constantly be making progress. If you fall off the wrong direction or whatever, then you're immediately eliminated. So you have to play like carefully, kind of, in a sense. That's one of my favorite games because you get a good number of people eliminated in it. And it's just like good platforming. It's like a good amount of pressure or whatever. And like mostly what you're fighting against is making sure that you are kind of like alone and there's not other people in your way when you're trying to do these different sections. I think that's an example of a really good game because it has impact and it's good platforming and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the game when they do stuff like season two or whatever from there.
Yeah.
So. All right. Any other questions about Fall Guys?
No.
All right, I'm going to move on to the second game I was talking about. Ghost of Tsushima. I ended up beating it, I think, 2 days ago. So cool. I finally closed it out. The game's really good. It's definitely like A-minus, maybe, is where I would put it. It's not like a perfect game. It's not one that I'm going to be thinking 10 years ago, like, damn, that was a perfect game or anything like that. But it's a really solid open-world game. It's really fun. It's not long, like a lot of open-world games are that suffer from that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. If you Critical Path it, it's probably like maybe a 10 to 20 hour game, maybe something like that. Like but there's plenty of things to do. So it's like, if you want to do every stinking thing in the game, you can, and it might be like a 40 to 50 to 60 hour game or something like that.
Yeah.
But the big compliment I want to pay to it is the story in the game is really, really well executed. So it made me think a lot of Subnautica, where it's like, okay, there's only like maybe 5 to 10 cutscenes throughout the game. You know, it's not like, it's not a very cinematic type game, like other things are, where it's like cutscene after cutscene, or like a Kojima game where there's like hours of dialogue, which we'll talk about when we talked with Cole. Instead, it's very sparse. You know, you're playing the open world game for the most part, but whenever you do get to a moment where you're sitting through a cutscene, they make a very big story change, or they'll make a very big beat whenever it happens. So they use their time very, very well in the game, to the point where at the end of the game, I was like very like emotionally moved by like the ending of the game. I'm not going to give anything away, but it was just like very, very beautiful, you know? Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was, all of this was done like committing so hard to the theme and being like respectful of that, I think, at least again, from my Western perspective, what it seems like respectful to that theme. Mm-hmm. It was just like a really enjoyable experience. So like, yeah, 2 thumbs up for sure. I don't know what to say about it.
Like, how is your power curve as you go? You know, most of these open world games give you the ability to do more and different things as you go. This seems relatively grounded.
This is something I noticed maybe in the last like boss fight, where there's a mechanic that they have in the game where it's like a dual like mode in the game, where it's like you'll be confined to like a circle arena. These are like random events you can have, or they might be something that's like interwoven in the main story. But it's events where you're like in a circle type arena, you have one other person, and it's just a strictly sword fight, and you're just doing like parries, attacks. You're using your health refill judiciously, that sort of thing. So there's a moment towards the end of the game where you're doing this, and you do this for like maybe 5 to 10 minutes. It's pretty tough, you know. And then they do one change where you're still fighting the same person, but it's not in the dueling mode. It's in the regular game mode. Okay. So you have access to all the other weapons that you have, which are like arrows, these bombs, smoke bombs, things like that. And you have like such a huge advantage if you learn to use those well, where you can just like completely take out the person with no problem. Whereas like before, if you're just doing the sword duel, like you might need to restart like 5-10 times, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So that kind of like spoke to me towards like, oh, okay. Like by the end of this game, like you can handle like anything they're going to throw at you if you have all the devices that you have. Like they have to kind of like artificially limit what you can do to make the game more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I noticed by the end. So, I mean, and there's like a good amount of upgrades. I know like the biggest, maybe the thing that there's like multiple options of how you can kill a shit ton of people for free. And so you can start chaining those together to the point where it's like, okay, I can kill 8 people, no problem, like instantly. Without even using any items, just with like these different upgraded things that I have that I can chain together. So they need to have more than 8 people for me to actually have to do some sword fighting here. And then you can start using like your items that are like sweet ninja items to get like cheese some kills. So you feel like pretty capable by the end of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that you still, the thing that kills a shit ton of people, or one of them, is the sword effect, like the showdown or whatever. You can like challenge someone to a showdown, when you first spot them, or you can try and sneak. Those are kind of like the two paths in the game, is like being honorable and facing someone eye to eye, or like sneaking around, just stabbing them in the neck. But the one where you face them like to a showdown or whatever, there's this weird mini game where you hold triangle and they like feign whether or not they're going to attack you or not. Mm-hmm. But then eventually they'll try and attack you. And if you have to let go of triangle before they hit to like take them out.
Okay.
But if you do it too early, they just get a free shot at you and you start with like no health for whatever the battle is.
Yeah.
So you do have to pass that mini game to mm-hmm. kill like the 8 people. But yeah, after that it's pretty easy.
It sounds like a different version of the gun duel mechanic in Red Dead Redemption.
Except they explain how to do it in this game.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Beyond one cutscene. Yeah.
Do you eventually get the ability to kill people directly with your parry ability?
So if you do, the range of parry is you miss, you get hit, you kind of are close and it just throws them off balance. So you might be able to hit them. You might not, depends on who you're fighting. And then there's a perfect parry where it's like, it leaves them completely vulnerable and you get like a free dank attack on them. It might kill them, but it might not.
Hmm.
Okay. Because that was one of my favorite features from Shadow of War, is eventually you could get the ability where when you did a perfect parry, you just automatically like killed a minion.
Yeah, it's close to that. If it's like a bigger guy, your first like perfect parry is not going to kill him. But yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to say too many of the mechanics, I think, because they do a good job of rolling out the mechanics as the game goes along. So even like when you're 2/3 of the way through the game, they'll be like, here's this new brand new mechanic that'll like help you out. And you're like, wow, that's sweet. You know, that'll be very effective in how I play the rest of the game. So, I don't know. Yeah, so I'm not sure what else to say about this. I think it's a sweet game. I'm curious to see like how long they milk this for, because what was the Infamous is the other franchise that the studio's done, right? And they made like 3 or 4 of those games, I think, before they switched to this.
Yeah, there was two, Second Son, and then the expansion, First Light.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they try and do the same pattern with this, right? Because I'm sure it takes a lot of development time to make a completely new IP, so they probably are going to say like, hey, yeah, get some extra mileage out of this and make like 2 or 3 more games out of this.
Yeah.
I hope that they still remain like respectful to the source material and don't like cash in on stuff. So, again, all that's a caveat. That's my perception of it being respectful to the material. I don't actually know. So
yeah.
Did you see they announced they're adding multiplayer?
I did not. That's interesting.
Yeah. So they've announced, they're adding co-op multiplayer, which will have both story missions and a horde mode. And also have said, apparently, this is going to be...
Horde mode's pretty awesome in that game.
That's why I was laughing.
Yeah. Good point. They also said that they're going to, in this mode, incorporate more of like supernatural elements. So it sounds like basically it's going to be Neo.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised like if they a way for them to go would be to like almost mimic Far Cry to a certain extent, where the main series ends up being pretty grounded, you know, but then they have at least one expansion pack or one like, you know, integral release that is based on the same engine that is fantastical. Think Blood Dragon.
Yeah, and at least for the last 2 games in this series have actually been good games, unlike the mainline ones.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, do like a Blood Dragon or Primal or
anime filter on it.
New Eden, right?
New Dawn or New Eden, something like that.
It's all chibi.
No, but like to have one that is more based in mythology, that might be pretty cool. That would be a good outlet for that instinct if they wanted to like keep the historical grounding, which people seem to appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the only thing that could have improved on this game is if they just made the default speaking in Japanese with English subtitles instead of English.
Yeah.
Because it definitely feels much better that way.
I forget, is that what they do in Sekiro? Maybe. It's been forever since I first loaded that up on either system that I played it on. But
I was going to say, you do a podcast about specifically that game. So
I do. I should know that, but that is also such a small detail that I forget with the... I initialized that game 2 times, once when I bought it on PS4, once when I bought it on PC.
Fair.
Yeah.
Nice. Never mind. I was going to tangent Sekiro, but I shall resist.
Sekiro, no.
Okay.
Yeah. That's basically what I was going to ask. I've heard nothing good about Sekiro.
Oh, it's fine.
Have you not talked to Cole about it?
No, it's not my favorite FromSoft game. I feel like it is pretty far afield from like what I really enjoy about it, but like, you know, or what I enjoy about those games, but like it's still, you know, has its really good moments and stuff like that. I just wish the exploration was better, and I wish that the difficulty was a little bit less of a hate fuck. But
yeah, you know. See, that's what I've heard is that the game was excessively difficult and exclusively in ways that weren't good.
It just depends. There are people, you know, like there are actual people listening, possibly, who enjoy the way that it is difficult. It just, you know, I hope that it is not indicative of where FromSoft is going to be taking future stuff. I hope that like this exists as like their attempt at doing like a Ninja Gaiden style, you know, character action game kind of thing.
This is like an office meme where there's like Sekiro and Dark Souls, and I'm just like, they're the same picture.
Seems way too hard. I don't have any other questions about Ghost of Tsushima. I'm curious. I want to play it. I'd like to see it on my TV.
It's awesome. There are some parts in the map that are just like absolutely gorgeous, and there's some that they don't even make you go to. So they did a good job on that front too, where the world's just really interesting and well laid out. So
yeah, they something that was pointed out to me that I really hope they eventually patch out. So, you know, the Kurosawa mode or whatever, where they make it black and white and they put film grain over it. You know, obviously that's yes. Obviously that sounds very cool to me. However, somebody pointed out that the film grain goes over the letterbox as well. Ooh. And that is not how letterboxes work, my dudes. That's how film grain is. So I hope that they eventually fix that. It is such a small thing, but for all of the attention to detail that they paid, you know, and I've, you know, seen, you know, like articles and features about working with the Kurosawa estate and stuff like that. The fact that they got that wrong is fucking ridiculous to me.
See, I thought on the other end of it where I'm like, this mode, while very, very cool, probably took a week to 2 weeks to implement. I feel like it's very, very not hard to implement.
Oh, geez. But was that all you had?
That is all I got. I do have a game that I'll eventually jump to next, but I haven't started playing it. But I also don't know how much more I'm going to continue to play Ghost of Tsushima, just to clear out the map and stuff.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah.
Nice. When you finish the game, does it like spit you back out and you can go finish stuff, or does it?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And it does the now like obligatory thing a game does, where it's like when you start the last mission, it says, you're not going to be able to come back here for a while. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely worth doing.
Yeah. They need to make a less explicit way of doing that, because it's kind of, it kind of breaks immersion in the game.
Let's see. I'll go. I played Fall Guys, but I do not have too much else to say about it. That isn't what you have said, Ben. It's fun, you know.
Have you made it to finals?
No, I've not made it to finals, but I've gotten pretty high. I've ranked pretty high.
All right, we'll get you there, dude. Get it on PC. Yeah.
Have they established, can you play as a Fall Gal?
You're free to... the characters are not explicitly gendered, and you're free to, you know, like, you have lots of colors and designs you can do. Yeah, I just
think it'd be hilarious if you could choose Fall Guy or Fall Gal and have it not change the appearance whatsoever.
Gonna Dark Souls it.
Oh man,
the appearance isn't gendered, but the names that they started putting above people are. So is the game.
Oh yeah, I suppose you're right. The other thing that I've been playing, I just got curious and I fired up more Death Stranding. I think this is probably the first time that I've talked about it since we did the Duckfest recording, possibly. I like this game. It's really interesting and neat, and not like stuff that I have, you know, played elsewise. I am also enjoying the story and the world and all of the, you know, sci-fi details about the way things work. I think that all of that stuff is interesting, even if the, you know, intended symbolism is anything but subtle. You know, it would be unrealistic to expect it to be. So, you know,
are you talking about Die Hard Man or Dead Man?
Man? I mean, like down to like exactly that thing where everybody's name is just what they are, you know, like, okay, it's whatever. I can decide to ignore that and focus on like the cool little bugs that people eat to recover their blood supply and things like that. I have just reached chapter 3, which means that I have crossed over like the big lake that is in the middle of the North American continent, where all of the void outs are. So like if the monsters in the game get a hold of somebody and kill them, like it causes an antimatter explosion that creates a big crater around them. This is like the inciting incident of the game. One of them wipes out like basically what is the capital of the new United States. But like even in the Midwest, there is just a gigantic like cluster of craters that became a new ocean that you have to like hop on a boat and get across. I have unlocked fast travel, which is pretty cool. With Fragile. All of that stuff. I've met somebody who really seems like they're going to be the main villain, kind of the separatist leader with the gold skull mask who can control the BTs.
Feels like a good bet.
Troy Baker, right?
Yeah, the Troy Baker guy, who again, it's over the top, but if you can just kind of go along for the ride, it's cool.
That's an important skill to have in this game throughout.
But you know, just if you can pay that price of entry, like I don't know, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, and even like failing has been pretty interesting. Like I have, you know, like I thought, okay, I'm, you know, coming back, I'm doing this delivery, I think I can cross that river. And like that, like there's just like when I do my little scan, I can see there's like a little road of yellow in between a bunch of red that I can get across. Like, no, I slip and fall. And then just like me chasing down. So you slip, you fall. That causes all of your gear, like all of the stuff you're carrying, to fall off of your back. And me just like powerlessly running down the side of the river. Like, hey guys, stop. Like hoping that it gets caught on some rocks, but it never does. but like, I very, like in my last session where I played for, you know, a few hours, like, I got this really empowering moment where I gained the ability to build a generator, and building the generator let me power up this kind of like decrepit and out of repair, like motorcycle. It's like a, it's like a reverse tricycle kind of thing. It's like a motorcycle that can switch between being, you know, a fast motorcycle or like a three wheeled, like multi-terrain kind of thing. And all of a sudden, whoa, I'm like blazing across the countryside and I'm like climbing up and down mountains with it. And like, yeah, this is, I can get used to this, baby. you know, and I'm building bridges and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm doing these bigger runs that, you know, are across all of the space that used to be, you know, pretty much like, you know, like a, not a full day, but like a lot of a session, you know, to get across. Right. And with the bike, being able to get around more quickly is, you know, it's something that's possible.
This is what I think is really strong about the game is like all of these mechanics are unique. Like the idea of like balancing being a focus of your, of the game mechanic, or like crossing a river. I mean, not since the Oregon Trail has that been like a game mechanic.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. No, every time I go to walk across, I think, okay, I'm going to caulk and ford.
Grueling pace, let's go.
Yep. Grueling pace, absolutely. Yeah. And I finally got a handle on doing combat, both with the mules, like the delivery addicts, which is such a weird concept that I decided to put in. And then finally, like, I got the blood grenades that let me fight the BTs. You know, so like, yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm progressing up the curve, and each time I get a new thing, it's, you know, it has a meaningful impact on play, and it is speeding up what is happening and making it kind of more engaging as it goes along. And I didn't really even have a problem when it was like a hiking sim, right? Like, I thought that was that was fun and good, like, you know, seeing what feels like an impassable mountain. And then, like, I see, oh yeah, like, somebody put a ladder there. Like, I can, like, get up there and I can place my own, and then I can get down the other side with this, you know, climbing anchor and, you know, rappel down. Like, all of that stuff was still cool. So, like, yeah. I'm liking the way that this is heading.
I forgot about that entire mechanic too, how it's like you get helped out in the game by other players who are playing the game somewhere else. You know, like, yeah, it's so awesome.
It's really neat. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they do a better job in this game than in, like, the Metal Gear games, as far as, like, very slow rolling out all the mechanics of things, of, like, ways you can interact with the world. Because I think that that's kind of something in previous games where it's like, it just goes by too fast. So it's like, I'm not going to use whatever that new, I don't know, spray that snake has. You know, that's like, there's too much. I just need to focus on this thing.
Yeah.
I think they do a good job of just doling them out one at a time, like every half an hour to an hour.
Yeah. So yeah, like, I dig it. It's good. I'm like in the game so far. I'm still very early on, you know. By looking at this, I'm probably like a third of the way through. It is a long game. We'll see if it justifies the length. But so far, at the very least, I am still, I don't know, like, I'm down for, like, this kind of, you know, heavily symbolic or metaphorical sci-fi, even if it is both, like, simultaneously dense and also incredibly blunt. You know? Yeah, it's good.
I'll be curious. There's, like, you'll start to have choices of, like, how you want to traverse the terrain. Mm-hmm. So I'll be curious to know, like, what sort of path you go down for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, looking forward to it. Also, it's a beautiful game. It looks really, really good in 4K on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's mine. Any questions about Death Stranding?
Glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. Dennis, I will throw to you.
Yeah. So I have a little update from the world of Salt and Sanctuary.
Okay.
We've defeated the Queen of Smiles in the Village of Smiles, which is not nearly as smiley as you think that would imply. funny enough.
It doesn't imply, it states.
Yeah.
Much like a Kojima game.
It's not subtext, it's super text.
If the jaw of the monster is ripped off, can you say it's smiling? Anyway, and we've gone into the Watching Woods, which is, it feels like the next area that you're supposed to go to. And again, in a Souls, like, you can never quite be sure you're going the right direction, but it is, like, incredibly deviously designed. Pretty much any way you can get into it, except for one, you're going to be starting very high in the trees, and everything is very small platforms where a dodge in either direction, which you reflexively do because that is the only way to survive in this godforsaken game, will send you off the ledge and plummeting towards the ground. That's terrifying, and that's frustrating, and that's really, like, you know, tricky design there. And doubly so if you are doing co-op, where if you fall, the camera does not follow you to the ground. It just shows a little pointer being like, you're that way, and you are left to wonder what horrible things are attacking you as you scream at your partner to get down here and help you.
Oh no. So it doesn't do a breakout. It doesn't do a
No, it is which is
as
it is,
Jen collects gold and then
later.
Oh, I wish that was a joke. No, it's
I've been around Jen.
Oh yeah. So, like, it is, it just, like, I'm sure they didn't think about that too much when they designed co-op. It's just like, oh, you know, if you get too far off to one side, we'll put a little arrow. But it really, that is the most legitimately just frightened and freaked out I've felt in a long time playing a video game. And it's, you know, a cutesy little 2D side scroll, as cutesy as, you know, a Dark Souls game can be, a little side scroller. But yeah, to like land and there's the initial chunk of health that comes off, and then you freeze because you're not sure if you fell all the way out of the trees or not.
Yeah, maybe you landed on a platform. Yeah,
exactly. So don't move, and then you see more chunks started coming off. and you don't know what's doing it or why or from what direction or if you should be like holding up arrows or what. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, delightfully malicious. And again, just elicited real panic in me in a way that I haven't felt in games for a while.
So how do corpse runs work in the co-op game? Or like what happens when one of you dies? Like, does the other person like have to get to a shrine and revive you or?
Yeah. I don't have it completely puzzled out. So the baseline understanding that I had is if you die, but your partner lives and they can get back to a shrine, everyone keeps their salt. So like you, okay, you only lose your soul's salt, whatever. If both of you die at the same time. And so, you know, that's accommodating, I guess. It also creates some really interesting circumstances where it's like, okay, you know, someone died trying to get to that item that you is just around the corner. Does the last person push on or do you like, all right, I'll traipse back to the shrine and carry you back. And then if you both die, either the bad guy that killed you has it, or if you fell off a ledge somewhere, which is happening a lot because, the Watching Woods, you know, it has a little like bat and spawns a little additional enemy that's very easy to kill that has your salt. Except there was one time where we both died, but I spawned back in with my salt. And I have no idea what did it. I don't think I had like an item to retain salt after death or anything like that equipped.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things where we I think it was versus the boss, just both died, pop back up, and I'm like, oh, I can level up. That's wonderful.
Cool.
And I have no explanation for that. Technically I think my account is the one that's being like pulled into the main account. Although we talked about how it's my account is Jen's account being pulled into the main account, which is mine being Jen's.
Yeah.
Wrap your mind around
Friday
that
situation.
Yeah. So I don't know if that was just a fluke or a glitch or if there was actually something going on that we might be able to repeat. Mm-hmm. But having everyone's salt stay intact if only one character dies is a nice little accommodation.
That's good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I have to say about Salt and Sanctuary. Any questions there?
No. Have you fought the Tree of Man yet?
I have not.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to ask if you haven't seen it.
Excellent. Okay.
Does this game ultimate, like I played some of this and stopped playing right about at. So I basically kind of skipped the Citadel of Smiles or whatever and went mm-hmm. directly to the woods. And ultimately stopped playing about there because it didn't seem to me like the game did enough to justify itself as not a almost literal Dark Souls clone.
Oh, it hews very close.
So, yeah. So I'd be interested to hear ultimately if you feel that like is this a game that justifies itself or like to me it almost seemed like just a fan game.
I mean I won't say you're wrong in calling it a fan game. I also am going to say that that has its merits, of course. The one big thing is that if you're doing local co-op you can persist after bosses in your co-op run.
Yeah.
So that alone is a huge accommodation. Mm-hmm. And the ability to do local co-op is unique. At least I think so, right? There are no Dark Souls games where you can have local co-op.
No. It's all online.
So that alone is it makes a huge difference. That actually it's actually a great segue for Remnant, which is the other game I've been playing.
Sorry?
Wow.
Oh,
shocked cool. Sir.
No.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, did you pick that up on Epic for free?
I'm not going to be able to read anything you say after that. It's not like surprised and trying to hide something.
No. Oh no. Oh. I didn't expect you to show up here. No,
you just invested like, you know, $300 in the Remnant Collector's Edition for me, and just it's worth.
I'm happy that you went benevolent with that. Like, yeah, no, and you've made it impossible for me to cut out that that little cough where a beverage went down the wrong pipe. So we have to keep it in now. That marker that I left there is for nothing. You've orphaned that marker.
Sorry, future Cole. Just keep going.
Is this Remnant from the Ashes?
Yeah, it is. So yes. Remnant from the Ashes, this was free on Epic last week, right?
So I've gone from like Salt and Sanctuary was the first Souls-like that I played in forever to now I've had two in the same week. And I'm enjoying getting back into the genre, if you will. So yeah, I booted this up and started a run. I have not done any of the co-op, which is what segued me in here. But when I tried to launch the game as friends only can join, it gave me an unspecified error. And I have no idea what the problem is. I tinkered around, couldn't find it. And so finally was just like, screw it, I'll do offline mode. So if there's like some sort of message leaving system or anything online, I haven't seen it.
Right.
But I can comment on the single player experience.
So this is touted as Dark Souls with guns, even though Immortal Unchained also did that.
Yeah, or what was the Surge was like sci-fi? That had guns, right?
I mean, not really. Like, you had drones that could do range combat sometimes, but it was not like your main mode of combat like in Immortal Unchained.
Yeah. Guns in this are very much the main mode. And I knew in the back of my mind this was third-person shooter. But the opening cutscene is very medieval-esque. And then the game starts and you're washed up on a beach with shipping crates, like shipping containers all around you. So that was kind of like, oh, okay, I guess we're really leaning into this gun thing. I was kind of envisioning blunderbusses and you know, flintlock pistols or whatever. But modern guns for the most part. The actual story, your motivations, role in the whole deal beyond kind of find this lighthouse are very, very obtuse from the beginning.
Wait, you're finding a lighthouse?
Yes.
So you're like Bioshock?
Trying to find a lighthouse. I did not put that thing there until I said it, but yeah. But again, your reasons for doing so don't really make sense. You know, you find the settlements and everyone talks to a lot, but reveals very little, which sparked the thought, you know, in the Souls games, if you enter a chat with someone, you're not locked into a cutscene. You can like roll away or wander off at any time.
Just like real life.
Yeah. And even though I've never or very rarely done that, just having the option makes me so much more okay with listening to dialogue. Whereas in Remnant, where it's full blown cutscenes left and right for the first 30 minutes of the game, at least. Weird. It's tough to get behind. So there's a lot of walking, a little bit of combat, and then just everyone wants to chat it up, really, really dig in and give you their backstories all at once. Ugh. And this includes me skipping a major portion of the game where you, I don't know, get your equipment before going and fighting in the first real area, which would have been nice to know. So I did the first like real combat, and survived it, got out the other side and was like, you know, I thought it said somewhere that I had like this weapon mod and something that I was going to get for my class that I chose. Where is that? And then I wander back there and there's just a room I missed that had everyone sitting there waiting to give me all my stuff. Oh. So ultimately, like, you know, it didn't cause me to die. So there's something to be said about the difficulty for this, at least so far, feeling a fair piece easier than other Souls likes. But yeah, there's certainly the option to just wander past very important things if you should so choose. And beyond that, like there's no reason I would have had to go to that room before I left for the game proper. You know, I could have gotten way, way further. And I imagine now that I say it, that people have without their equipment. But yeah, so I'm playing the class that has a repeater, a shotgun, and then a giant hammer. So everyone gets kind of two ranged weapons and a melee weapon.
Do you know what the class is, by the way?
What's that?
Do you know what the name of the class is?
oh gosh, it's like the scrapper or the tank or something like that.
Oh, you mean?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it sounded very cool on paper. And then I realized that a shotgun and a hammer are effectively the same thing, at least in terms of what you're doing with it in the gameplay. So I'm regretting that choice a little bit.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Something's close to you. Now it is dead. That is
okay. The I see.
And so I'm regretting that choice a little bit, but honestly, I expect I'll be finding new weapons and upgrading stuff, as we go. But,
it's explicitly, from what I recall, it's explicitly like freeform leveling.
Yep. Yeah. You get, right now I've got access to 3 stats. I don't know if they'll give me more, and you just choose one every level.
Yeah. You'll get a lot more.
Yes. good to know. And yeah, so, you know, I don't expect that to hamstring me for too long. But all that aside, the gunplay and just the weight of combat feels really, really good in this game. Like even your repeater that can, you can pop off shots as fast as you can click, still somehow feels weighty, which, I can't quite explain, but it's nice. And in general, just every swing of the hammer, every boom of the shotgun. What do shotguns do? Shot of the shotgun. Yeah, we'll boom go with that. Good. Yeah,
it's a boomstick.
Yeah, they boom.
It is every boom of the boomstick in Whoville.
How the Grinch murdered Christmas.
How the Grinch took Christmas back.
That's right. You know, it just feels right, and it also feels very soulsy. You know, where every swing has weight and intent to it. I very much get that vibe. Just you're using firearms now, so
yeah.
Well done on that front. There's the boss design as well. At least I played through the first boss. Boss design was really good. Forced me to like rethink and have to be more intentional about parts of the game I hadn't really, I'd kind of ignored up to that point. And so it just felt very well designed, very tight. Took me several tries, but I kind of knew why I died each time, and the eventual win was that much sweeter because of it. So that's always, you know, that always is an indicator of good design to me.
Yeah.
So which was the first boss for you?
Oh gosh, I'm not going to remember the name of it, but it's the big root guy. Powers up and charges you with a sword. Does bleed damage, and you're in kind of a steam room or boiler room with a bunch of those exploding bad guys.
Okay. For what it's worth, as a side note, the order of the levels and what levels you see are procedurally generated.
Yeah, because I rested at the crystal bonfire equivalent. And went back through the level once, because I kind of got to where I knew I was about to hit the boss, and was like, I don't have any health left. I'm just going to go like, I bet I can do that better. And then everything was different. So the physical level was the same. I did do it better. Yes. I had two not Estus flasks left.
Don't worry. Just call them Estus flasks. Like at the beginning, when we start covering a new game on Bonfireside Chat, we give a rundown and we say like, they call Estus this. These are bonfires. We're going to call them Estus and bonfires. Like just understand.
Like, the other thing that's interesting about that procedural design and just generally the way the enemies behave is they will hunt you and find you from across the map.
Hmm.
And so you can never be confident that there isn't someone sneaking up behind you. And I love that.
Do you have to aggro them first or?
No. Like you don't have to deal damage to them. I think it has to do with the gunfire, actually. If you make too much noise, I think they start looking
for you. They say like, yeah, there's a fight over here. We need to go take them out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what I've read into it. I don't know that for sure. So I might change my tune on that. But it makes every step so freaking tense. and I've turned around and had a big fuck off enemy right behind me about to strike, only once or twice, but it guarantees that midway through every firefight, I have an oh shit moment, turn around and check.
See if you have company.
Well, cause part of it is also like every firefight more or less has a mini boss in it.
Oh, is that right? Everything has kind of that is built around one of the more difficult enemies.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's quite that, like, rote mechanical of, like, one-to-one, but, like, basically what it ends up being is about that.
Yeah, so there's definitely grunt enemies and need-to-take-seriously enemies.
Right, and usually there's about one of those need-to-take-serious enemies in each encounter.
Yeah, I think that holds. And the other, like, the tension of you know, knowing you're kind of being hunted, probably, maybe check behind you just to be sure, is really good. The other thing it does really well is your like magazine size in relation to these little grunt enemies trying to swarm you. Like I guess I haven't noticed the like, oh crap, my magazine's almost out, I haven't killed everyone, I need to decide if I'm going to try to reload before they get to me, or just commit to the hammer, or do I switch? Wait, did I reload my last weapon after the last combat? Like, that little mind game as people start to swarm you is really, really tight.
So I would give that of the answer of like why the hammer is not the same as the shotgun, in that like usually my MO is melee weapons on minions, guns for the like mini bosses.
Yeah, and I tried a little bit with that approach because the game does warn you, like, hey, conserve ammo for bosses. This is, you know, you're gonna regret it if you run out. And then it doles it out like candy the entire level. So maybe that goes away in higher difficulties, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, so but I haven't noticed actually running out of ammo. I've noticed more reloading.
Yeah, the reloading is great, and that is well done. Usually, that's just a minor inconvenience, and now it just feels like your magazine size has weight. And again, that decision of do I switch? Do I just I've got three shots left. Is that enough? Do I need to start winding up my hammer? Because the other thing is, you know, for me at least, the melee weapon has a wind up. And so you need to make that commitment early enough to get your swing in, in time, or get your swing out in time. That also leads to my downfall a lot because, turning around and having someone surprise you, you kind of panic fire just reflexively. Mm-hmm. But you left click without first zooming with right mouse button, that's melee. And if you hold right mouse first, weird. And then click, it's fire.
So you can't hip fire.
Right. No hip fire. That's straight to melee. And so there's so many times where something will spook me, and then I've committed to this big wind up animation that gets me killed. That's why I died against the first boss so much is, I would kind of run away, reloading, turn around. Oh, he's right there. And I'm now slowly winding up to kill him, and my health is gone. I'm dead.
Ooh.
Yeah. So learning that self-control was a big part of overcoming the first boss. And I liked that.
Nice.
Final little quibble here is the overworld that you move through feels very empty right now. It's, your gigantic, ruined post-apocalyptic city street, just like you've seen in literally every video game, with absolutely nothing in it. Like, there is an enemy or two, nothing that's going to put you under real threat. And you run for so long to get from place to place.
Yeah.
It could easily, I don't know if maybe they fill it out with enemies, in harder difficulty modes or what, but they could easily have made it half the size and been just fine.
Yeah. It sounds like they wanted a lot of geometry to do the proc gen stuff, with enemy placements inside of it.
That feels like the intent right now. It just feels empty. So again, if I go back through hard mode and suddenly it's shambling masses all over the place, great, wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'll stop complaining. But until then, I just want to get to the dungeon, man. Like, let's cut to the dungeon. Because the game is good. It feels good to play. The boss design is great. The level design, while not nearly as intertwined as other Souls-likes, is solid. Like, it created interesting decisions on, do I need to rush this guy to get to better positioning, or do I kind of bait him to me? Overall, it's a great experience, just with those couple little quibbles in there.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Nice. Remnant from the Ashes. Are you going to fire it up and try and do it multiplayer, or...
If I can get past that damn error, like, I don't know what's causing it. I need to Google or something.
Yeah. I wonder if that's something to do with Epic and their launcher as opposed to, Steam or something else. I have no idea.
My experience with Epic has, would indicate that.
Yeah.
Epic has been kicked out of all the internets.
Yeah, and they're fighting back, and technically, yeah, I don't know.
Hey, save it. We're going to talk about that in like 15 minutes.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question you asked the nice people, and who suggested it?
Yeah, so this one comes from Aaron, and he suggested that we talk about the moments that got us to love games. So, you know, games are such long-form experiences that can be easy to sit on the fence for a while and not really be sure what your opinion of the game is. So what are those moments that took you over the edge from might be okay to definitely awesome?
Yes. And this is not loving games in particular, but like a game that you started playing, were keeping at arm's length, and then it did something that made you very like, oh yeah, this is for me. This is good. This is cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going to start here with Greg, who writes, when a friend showed me Grand Theft Auto 3, I was very unsure about it, as the game was like nothing that I had played before and was outside my normal scope of games that I enjoy. After my first carjacking, police chase, ramming fest, and wild escape, I was hooked and still a fan of the franchise. Oh yeah, so all you needed to do was like get exposed to like the non-mission loop of the game, which is how, I mean, at least in the early games, like, I don't know, I spent way more time like sitting around with friends, just getting our star rating as high as we could, and then getting caught or killed, and then handing it off to the next person.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I'm not a fan of wrestling. Not a hater, just not a fan. Never played a wrestling game until the game called Here Comes the Pain went at a friend's house. There were four of us. We each took turns making characters that looked like us, then started playing matches. The controls were weird. The rules of matches were made no sense. But we started a Fatal four-way ladder match, don't ask, for fun. 45 minutes later, we finished. I swear we are all on the edge of our seats, and the noise we are making probably disturbed our neighbors. Since then, we have played that game for a day once a year, every year. I'm still not a fan of wrestling, but this game is absolute perfection for multiplayer mayhem and legitimate pulse-pounding action.
Yeah.
So, you know, they make like looter shooters. I really want a looter professional wrestler game. Like a professional wrestling MMO.
Yeah, or like every time you break a table, like you get a little like a green to purple drop.
Yeah. Yep.
I was thinking you pin someone down and they just rifle through their pockets.
What kind of tights have pockets?
I was gonna say.
Well, I mean that's only if you spec into heel, right?
No. If you're in face, it's all about posing. Yeah. Ben, what does Dan say?
Dan says, early on in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, I was a little bit disappointed. I was a Jedi who was getting mauled by mutant dogs and shot by a handful of stormtroopers. Didn't feel like the experience of a Jedi had expected. It draws it out quite a bit, and then there it ramps up and dishes out powers and skills at a pace so that by the end, I trusted only in the Force. It also matches my recurring dream I had in the early 20s, where I had Jedi mind control powers. That was always a bummer to wake up after. So disappointed every time to realize I'm a mere human.
Aw. Then just never wake up. I mean, alive, no, please. No, yeah, wait, yeah, no, wake up. Just pretend. That's all you need to do. Dennis, what does Mike say?
Mike says, hey, gang, ever hear of a game called Bloodborne?
Maybe.
It took a little while of crashing against the waves of that game before it finally clicked. Spoilers, I kept trying to play it like Dark Souls 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. That shield, right? Anyway, I kept on, even though my frustration was growing by the minute. Finally, I ended up on a bridge and got attacked by the cleric beast. Oh, fuck, I exclaimed out loud as I dove in. Miraculously, I managed to take him out on my first try. Wow. As I stood there, out of the blood, out of blood vials and Quicksilver bullets. I mean, out of Estus and whatever Quicksilver is.
And about spell charges. Yeah.
Yeah. Sliver away from dying, while completely drenched in blood, a switch went off. It's easily one of my all-time favorite games now. And that early moment was its apotheosis.
I still maintain, like, I think the whole you can't level up until you get to the boss, while kind of cool just from, like, the Plain Doll being maybe my favorite Soulsborne character, like, is horrible game design.
I mean, yeah, I can see that. At this point, it is a tradition, although I don't believe they did that in Sekiro.
They didn't really do that in like at least Dark Souls 1 or 3.
So Dark Souls 1, you needed to get through the asylum in order to reach Firelink and level up at level up at the bonfire there. And then in 2, you could level up as soon as you reach the Emerald Herald. There was no real like boss in between you. Dark Souls 3, you had to beat Eudyx Gunder, that like knight who turned into the big Abyss T-Rex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess Dark Souls 1 at least. I don't remember. I remember the Firelink or the Asylum being fairly trivial, although maybe.
Yeah, the Asylum
maybe
Demon.
Maybe I got lucky.
The Asylum Demon is especially just like he has like 3 moves. He's not really much of a wall, is the thing.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Now that you mention it, I do remember 3 being a little more frustrating.
Yeah, Eudyx Gunder is a real. I mean, that's a hard fight. And it like gets a real shot across the bow in terms of like showing you that like bosses are going to have multiple phases and their movesets are going to be really wild and stuff like that. I wish that they would have done a softer introduction of that. But
yeah, I do like when you may or may not fight him again, though.
That's a good fight. I like that. Yeah, good fight, good area. Let's see here. OMG Amoose says, Dragon's Dogma. Playing the first 25 levels was such a slog. Basically no moves, no idea how to play, and every enemy was super deadly. After 25, though, you have multiple options of how to play, and the gameplay just clicks at that point. Settle into being a ranger, a sword and shield guy, or a sorcerer unleashing meteors. Man, you make the choice sound very obvious. OMG. Or the most powerful class, tosser of pawns and barrels. So, yeah, I'm gonna main DK. I'm gonna roll Donkey Kong. Oh man. Yeah, so I guess 25 is, I've not played this game, much to my shame, really. But 25, I guess, is when you are able to specialize into a class, possibly?
I think that might actually be when you are able to specialize into, like, your upgraded version of the class.
Oh, it's like your prestige class kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah, although I didn't play a ton of it, but it sticks in my mind that might be what that is.
Yeah. David, what does Alex say?
Alex says, I didn't like Atelier Ryza.
Atelier Ryza?
Okay, Atelier Ryza. Because its Anamu Cheesecake, the Power of Friendship motifs are laid on as thick as the protagonist's thighs. And that stuff is like kryptonite to me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't sound so bad. But then at about the 8-hour mark, the alchemy system completely unfurled itself, and I've now lost hecka hours from digging around inventory/crafting menus and making spreadsheets to break the dog whine out of the game. It's a feeling of, oh, you exploited alchemical redundancies to become an overpowered god? That's cool. Have fun. That I haven't felt since something like Morrowind's spellcasting and Oblivion enchanting system, to a lesser extent. The game owns, and I think its story has melted the ice around my heart a little, which I was not expecting.
Huh. Okay. Notionally, let's pretend that I don't like anime, you guys. I know it's a reach. I would not look at the Atelier series as, something that would bear fruit for me. I'm happy that you were able to look past that and get something good. I love a breakable system in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to trust.
That, and that is a particularly animu looking animu game.
Yeah. I'm tempted by the thick thighs on the protagonist, but I worry that might be the only thing that there is. Oh man. And I'm going to trust that dog whine is not some kind of like weird hate speech. I have no idea. I did a search for dog whine to break the dog whine out of this game. All I found is people making whine for dogs, which sounds like a ridiculously bad idea.
Combined with Hekka earlier on, I was going to assume it was a fun euphemism for piss.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. That makes a little bit of sense. Break the piss out of the game. Yeah. So I'll trust you there, Alex. Like to be that grace.
Wine made from dogs.
Oh
no!
I got really sad.
Ben, this isn't The Last of Us 2.
Ben, what does David say?
David says Nomansky. When I first got the game, it was not great. I died of heat exposure almost instantly, was broke, and spent 3/4 of my time scrounging for fuel components and couldn't afford anything. I actually ended up putting the game down for a while until they released an update that added some starter quests to guide you through those early times and provide some rewards that made the transition into the real game smoother. Once you make it past the resource starved phase into this self-sufficient / the universe is my oyster phase of the game, it's infinitely more fun. I'm now close to 100 hours deep in the game and have gone from a cashless space hobo to a captain of the fighter fleet with his own industrial complex that salvages starships on the other side for fun.
Ooh.
Wait, what? I didn't know you could salvage starships.
That sounds cool.
You didn't?
No.
What do
I've
you
never
do
even
with
gotten
all the extra starships you get?
I didn't know you could do it for fun. I did it purely for business reasons.
Yeah. Well, I love the idea of like rolling up on a dead Hulk. And mm-hmm. maybe it's overtaken by monsters and you can can go in and clear it out and then mark it for salvage later for your fleet to go in and it gets your resources.
Oh, see, it's like actually even better RPG. Because you aren't marking for salvage. It's like rolling in a dead Hulk and being like, all right, I need to figure out how to make this able to fly with only the resources I can get on this planet.
Are there monsters inside?
Sometimes.
Okay, yes, that sounds cool.
Also, sometimes half-starved pirates.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Turn into monsters.
Yeah.
Because of their...
I like the idea of rolling it. I don't know, like that loop that it describes sounds like a very fun game to me. Yeah. And then round us out here, Dennis with Rookie. What does Rookie say?
Oh, I posted the one from Aaron because he didn't actually post. Oh. He gave his answer in the message, but didn't post it to the thing. So
okay. I will refresh. And why don't you say what Rookie says while I refresh?
All right. They say, I love Star Wars and have a soft spot for a lot of them, even when they're not great. However, Jedi Fallen Order just didn't click for me. In their eagerness to make the game Dark Souls with lightsabers, they didn't quite think it through. It could work if you were a normal human rebel or a defecting stormtrooper or something, but that Souls early game disempowerment just turns into frustration when you're supposed to be playing as a superpowered space wizard wielding a sword made of friggin' lasers that's hot as the sun. How is a stormtrooper or a random space animal able to tank a single hit from this thing, let alone kill me? It just didn't click for me until a couple hours in when I realized I could trade in my character's wiffle ball bat for an actual lightsaber by putting it on the easiest difficulty setting. There we go. Nice.
I like to imagine that it was literally like they realized that their character was equipped with a wiffle ball bat.
Oh,
I realize
that's problem.
Not what they're saying, but I just love that image.
I mean, so I know we're trying to get out of here because we all have places to be. It's, you know, coming up on 10:30 or no, we're past it. It's past 10:30. Oh, boy. Yeah. no. But so wiffle balls, not specifically the bats, but like the actual wiffle ball was something that I learned about those is that, you know, oceanographers are like people who go underwater and like take photographs of, you know, plants and animals and things like that down there. A wiffle ball is something that they will put in the, like they carry them down and they put them in the photo for like an instant size comparison, as opposed to taking measurements, because a wiffle ball is hollow and it has the holes. Like it's just the, you know, just the shell. And every wiffle ball is 3.5 inches long. So they can just like do a quick analysis for how big the specimen is by comparing how many wiffle balls is it.
Now I really want to make a 4-inch long wiffle ball.
Just put it out there. Chaos mode. And then I'll round us out here with Aaron. He says, for me, the scene in the bar where Priscilla performs, between seeing the detail in NPC's faces, and the overall mood of it, I know I picked a winner. They're referring to The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt. They're talking, yeah, and that's the image here. Priscilla being kind of the female counterpart to Dandelion, the you know, the bard who you end up like helping out to put on a big show. Yeah,
that's cool. The breadth of stuff you can do in that game is just phenomenal.
It's a very good game. I wish that I hadn't done everything in it so I could play it again. Oh, well.
Should have chewed a bit longer before you swallowed.
I had to do it for a show, so I was under the gun. I could not. I was being forced to chew it quickly.
Oh, forced well. To play an awesome game. Yeah.
Yes, forced. Pity me, everybody. Pity me. I'll do mine real quick. I thought about this, and I think every game has one of these. And to be just a caricature of myself with Dark Souls, you know, I've famously or infamously on the network, not in the broader, populace, but on the network anyway, like I really bounced off of it at the start. I just was put off by the controls and, you know, had a bad experience trying to head to the graveyard instead of up the canal from Firelink. You know, go back and listen to that episode. I have thoroughly eaten crow about that. One of the things that got me like to give it another chance actually was reading a thread about the game on Something Awful, which not only gave like beginner's tips saying like, hey, like if you're having trouble, roll as a pyromancer, roll as a sorcerer. But also like, just like, like seeing people talk obliquely before there were really any like walkthroughs or wikis about later mechanics. Specifically, I remember reading about being egg burdened. For people who aren't aware, like it's a very rare status condition that can affect you, but like I was reading about, like, yeah, there are these enemies in this one particular spot where if they do this specific attack on you, there'll be an egg implanted on your head. Like it's not really clear that it's happening, but like I was reading about, like, oh, you can tell if your character is like itching their head, and then eventually like you'll be unable to equip a helmet. And I was like, whoa, so this is just like a whole like intricate system that they built in that not everybody is guaranteed to see, but is like really weird and body horror-y as the egg hatches and all of that. And I was like, I need to like take a look at this, because there's more to this than just like weird, you know, like D&D just like you know, D&D derived kind of stuff. So yeah, it wasn't something I played, but it was something that I read that made me realize, oh yeah, there's something more going on here.
Nice.
David, how about you?
Yeah, so for me, I think it was probably Bloodborne. I, again, you know, kind of bounced off it initially. Partially the difficulty and just not really liking the parry system.
Okay.
So what ultimately did it for me was, one, coming back around and I'm blanking out. What is the giant like great sword?
Is it the one that morphs into the into the hammer?
No, it's the one that's either a regular sized sword or a huge sword.
I can't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah, but basically using that in like greatsword mode and just not using anything else and just saying like screw the guns.
Yeah, I'll poise through your attack. I don't need to deflect it at all.
Right, exactly. But then the kind of the counter-wise one was you know, shortly after that, so this would have been like somewhere along the lines of like the was it Henrik Charnel Lane or whatever?
Yep.
Is I got really into the Chalice Dungeons.
Okay.
And that ends up being like, at least for me, like my biggest argument for difficulty in a game is like a game is justified in having as much difficulty as it will teach you to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically does a great job of teaching you a lot of the kind of sub mechanics of the game, like the fact that you can play the game often as like straight up a stealth game.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And so that was the other thing that, you know, really was a game changer for me.
Yeah. The weapon that you're referring to, just for people who are curious about it, it is Ludwig's Holy Sword or Ludwig's Holy Blade. Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually you go on, like, there were other weapons. Like there are some other really great weapons that aren't gun based.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I did get to like using the parry system at least some, but yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Ben, how about you?
I think the only example I have, and I think I've gone through this one before, is Metal Gear Solid 3 is a game that I bounced off of particularly early, but then one of my roommates guided me through it and just showed like, oh yeah, you can use like, you can shoot at this beehive and like hurt enemies that way. Go. Awesome.
Yeah. Just showing you the depth of the simulation that was going on there.
Yeah.
Nice. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to harken all the way back to the original Ratchet and Clank.
Okay.
And that was like when we were kids, I was all into Jak and Daxter. My brothers were into Ratchet and Clank, and I never understood it or really got it. And then I got to the point where you get the suck cannon.
Okay.
Which does what it says, you know, it can pull enemies in a vortex and then fire them out. It doesn't have traditional ammo. You just, you know, sweep up the little minions around you and then fire them at the big minions. And I think to that point I had seen like, oh, you have a blaster and you have a, you know, a bomb glove, which is like, oh, your grenades are in a glove instead of on your belt. How original. I just, you know, the promise of wacky weapons wasn't really delivered for me on it. And then when I got my hands on the suck cannon, it was just, you know, that one felt special and unique enough to kind of live up to the promise of the game. And we found it hilarious for some reason. Yeah. So that was the point where I was like, okay, I'm for this game. I like this game.
I will not actively lobby to have this game, every copy of this game destroyed.
I mean, this game sucks. Then it's great.
That sucks. And then it sucks.
That game.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you everybody for writing in. Thank you, Aaron, for suggesting this question. We appreciate it. If you'd like to participate in these, watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons or Monday sometime during the day there at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. I will get started here. I have a story that I'm pretty happy about, which is that this was just announced today as of the time we're recording here, but Hypnospace Outlaw, one of my kind of the things that I most enjoyed covering on WAF for the entire run of the show, but especially recently here, indie game that is kind of like a simulation of the 1990s, or like the 1990s web, like late 90s web, that is getting kind of a second release. That was initially only for PC. However, it is being brought to consoles, so PS4, Xbox One, additionally the Switch later on this month on August the 27th. This is cool. However, I'm also pretty excited because it is getting extra content extra content as part of this big update. So like 2 more hours of new music, and the music in this game is really good. More, nice. more sites and stuff like that. I don't know if there are going to be more quests or puzzles and stuff that you're going to do, but like a big part of playing this game is going through and trying to figure out what is meaningful to the story. And like a lot of that is content that is actually just really fun or nostalgic to see. But yeah, it's going to be getting this release here on the 27th of August. So real soon. So not only will more people get to play it, but there'll be more of it for them to play.
Nice.
If the Space Outlaw is really good, you guys, if you have,
I can't tell if you like it or not.
it's just, I don't know. Like if you have any affection at all for that era of the web, you know, if you were, you know, I mean, people in our age cohort, in our early 30s, you know, we likely, you know, kind of came to the web around that time, if not a little bit before it. And yeah, it's both a very good adventure and puzzle game, but also it is a fun blast from the past.
Yeah, for our younger listeners, there was once a time when people had hope that technology would make the world a better place.
Yes.
It's a real brief period of time, like 10 years tops.
In 1999, a lot of people worked very hard to make sure that computers would still be around, whereas right now I am funding as much as I can research into a button I can press that will bring the whole thing down. So... if you would like to throw it in this, my GoFundMe is no. let's see here. Dennis, what's going on with Rogue Legacy?
Yeah, this is mostly a thing exists in Boss here, but Rogue Legacy has a sequel and it's in early access now, which this was nowhere on my radar. The biggest change that I've seen is that they start offering gold incentives for bad perks. So whereas previously you kind of would never take a perk that made the game, or, you know, family trait that made the game more difficult if you could help it. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want some extra cash, you might be incentivized to take that vertigo or whatever else it might be.
I have vertigo.
I mean, made the game unplayable. but now it gives you a 70% boost to your gold intake.
That's good.
That assumes you can survive long enough to farm any meaningful amount of gold, which we all know the answer is no.
No, because Vertigo is terrible. Yeah, it's a, yes. Why would you choose it?
Yeah. So, but you know, it's an interesting idea. It gives them more ability to balance stuff ongoing. So instead of needing to completely rework an ability, you just change how much gold it offers if it's, you know, more difficult than you would like. Mm-hmm. They're doing a couple other interesting things with the game, but very, very early access. So hard to say too much. But this, you know, this is one of those roguelike or roguelites, as they call it, that I sunk a lot of time into. And the only mm-hmm. reason I didn't finish it is it had one of those fuck you end bosses where, you know, you finally get far enough to get to the final room. And then the boss is just impossible. And it's like, okay, well now I get to sink another 70 hours into figuring this out. And I get to try it once every 3 hour run through. Because that's a great way to reward players.
Yeah. It's a final exam. They never prepared you, to study.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that you need to walk 3 hours to get to class.
Yeah.
Each time you take it. So hopefully, you know, obviously we don't know about that yet, with Rogue Legacy 2. Hopefully they polish that up a bit. And then in general, the other changes look very positive. So keep your eye out. I really enjoyed this game. It's one of the few roguelikes that I actually even got to the end boss. So that's a ringing endorsement there.
Nice.
Is this a new feature, or did the original have it? It now at least has the DuckTales like sword bounce.
I don't know.
I don't recall that being in the first game. That feels like it would have been a bigger thing if it did.
Yeah, like a pogo stick kind of deal?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I don't remember that being in the first game.
Yeah. I remember when that came through in Shovel Knight, people talked about it like it was the second coming. And it is. It's good. Like it's a good mechanic, but yeah. Ben, what kind of bullshit is Epic getting up to? But like, what kind of bullshit is Apple and Google up to? Like, I don't care who loses because we're all gonna lose. I don't care who wins because we're all gonna lose. But go ahead.
it's fun to watch because it's like two companies you don't care about fighting one another. So you actually are guaranteed to win because you see your enemies suffer. But
this is like when Wendy's picks a Twitter battle with McDonald's.
But I like Wendy's. At least their Twitter. I'm not going to say anything about their food. Anyway, what's happening between Epic and Apple was the original issue, is that Epic Games, they have the Epic Game Store, but they also make Fortnite as their main bankable game. They made in-app purchases in Fortnite that goes around the Apple Store and the Google Store. Mm-hmm. So basically just directly gives they run their own payments. Apple said that this was illegal or against their terms, so they are kicking Fortnite off of the App Store that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And then Epic is now counter-suing them, saying that these are like monopolistic practices that are, you know, like preventing like there being any sort of competition. So I guess it's not monopolistic, but antitrust type laws.
Yeah, or just like it's a duopoly and let's say an unseemly and should be a legal consolidation of power where the company that owns the platform is also adjudicating the marketplace and taking, let's say, an usurious cut.
Yeah. And also in a bid to prove that, no, we definitely don't have, you know, coercive power. Apple has since announced that they are cutting out Epic's ability to even develop anything for any Apple product.
It's fucking bullshit. So I said like, oh, no matter who wins, we lose. But like, Apple's obviously in the wrong here. This is god awful.
Especially because apparently that when they say like Epic can't develop for any Apple product, that now means that anyone that uses the Unreal Engine no longer can develop for an Apple product.
Yeah. So imagine you are 80% of the way through developing a game that is on the Unreal Engine and you were banking on selling to a market that included Apple devices, whether that was, you know, iOS or whether that was, you know, macOS itself, you know, pretty big market depending on the type of game you have. Apple just said, fuck you. You as a developer can't do this. So like my anger at Epic is for picking this fight and ultimately getting the smaller devs screwed. But regardless, the smaller dev is going to be screwed anyway. And they were already screwed because Apple was talking about taking a 40% cut as opposed to a 30% cut. Like it's Apple and, you know, by extension, Google, who they have very similar practices. They're not good actors in this.
Do you guys know the subreddit? Am I the asshole?
Yes.
Where it's like you describe a situation and then people vote like, yeah, you are. Like, no, that person's an asshole.
Yeah,
but there's one option that's everybody sucks here. And this is the option that's here. Or that's for this case is everybody sucks here.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't like think about Epic, for example, like they're, you know, saying like, oh, you know, like they're having all these anti-competitive practices, but they have the Epic Games Store and they make exclusives for that. Like, isn't that anti-competitive as well?
Mm-hmm. They're trying to build their own version of this.
Yeah, it's not like that they're completely innocent here. They're like the, you know, the bastion of the, like the free internet or something like that. I'm sure they're probably doing it for financial reasons, because if they can get off of those apps and make all the profits for themselves, then that makes their game Fortnite much more profitable. And so I think it's a situation where everyone sucks here, but I do think that it's probably better if Apple isn't taxing everybody, you know, 30% or 40% of all the sales.
Yeah.
In the same way that I feel like, on the one hand, it's like, I understand that you need to do that for certain things, like, for example, like Unity game engine and stuff like that. Otherwise, they can't make it free for everybody. Mm-hmm. Like they have to charge people. So there's like a barrier to entry. So I can get it in some situations, but for like
some things need to be charged for so that the business that makes them can continue going. But Apple as a gatekeeper to their marketplace.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. You cannot make the argument that changing the terms even slightly would be an existential threat for them. Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's also a thing of like, it's not even just their marketplace. It's like, it would be different if they said like, these are the rules of the App Store, but like, if you want to install Steam on your Mac or whatever, like, you know, go for it. But it's basically the App Store is the only thing that can work on Apple devices.
Yeah, specifically Apple mobile devices. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Epic kind of lost credibility in like saying, hey, we're going to do this to aid the little guys. Like, yeah, we're trying to break this down. We're trying to, you know, stop Apple from taking this cut by forcing Apple into a situation where they harmed little developers.
Yeah.
By completely revoking. Yes, it was Apple who pulled the trigger, but Epic also forced them into it and chose a course of action that would like lead to just a bunch of people getting fucked.
I don't know if it's like reasonable to expect that they should have known that would have been their reaction if they tried to like sue them in retaliation.
I don't know.
Yeah, because I feel like that's almost like, I was surprised just because that seems like such a dumb move on Apple's part.
Yeah.
Just because
yeah.
It basically proves that their argument.
Yeah, yeah. It proves that they're monopolistic. Yeah.
And it's cutting off money for themselves if that's what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, but like that's the problem when you allow a company to get that big. You know, just imagine if cash on hand is your breath capacity, Apple can hold their breath longer than any other company on the planet. So
even
all they
Nintendo?
Have, yeah, probably, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. I mean, Apple could buy several countries at this point, but like all Apple has to do is just hold their breath and then boom, anybody that we're fighting with dies because they
allow
can't hold their breath as long as us.
Introduce you to the problems of capitalism.
Yeah.
Wait, capitalism has problems?
I believe we have much to discuss. No, if anybody else has anything like last they want to say, I don't want to stop this, but we do need to move on to our final story here. But yeah, this has been annoying me. It's a continuing shit show. David, what's going on with Fall Guys and brands?
Yeah, so Fall Guys has basically announced like, hey, we're a popular thing and lots of brands want marketing stuff, so how about you guys all bid money and to go to I don't have the name of the charity, but bid money for donations to a charity that helps gamers with accessibility.
Okay.
And whoever bids the most will put a costume. You can design a costume with your branding on it, and we'll put it in the game, which is kind of cool. So apparently currently in the lead is G2 Esports,
yes,
which is apparently a thing.
So this is brilliant, because what company is going to bid and then not give the money to charity, whether or not they win?
Also true. Yeah.
Like I think this is brilliant.
I really want to see. I really want to see which charity they're having people go to. But this, this article doesn't surface that, it doesn't seem. But yeah, the leading bid is G2 Esports with just over 200,000, which beats Ninja's which beats Ninja's bid by just a little bit.
I think my favorite in terms of like proposed costume is Walmart, which is just the Walmart greeter vest.
That's actually kind of funny.
Also, apparently the top reply was to them posting this was, if this happens, I hope you leak the info out to be on brand, which Walmart replies, that sounds like us.
Oh, yeah. At the very least, I mean, so yeah, on one hand, this is a bunch of brands getting a chance to be woke and gaining goodwill on Twitter, but also it is materially helping a very good cause. The charity, it is based out of the UK, is called Special Effect. Specialeffect.org.uk is the name of the organization. Looks like a cool place. Based on what I'm seeing in their news feed. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, just seems kind of fun.
Yeah. you know, just get them to fight. Let them fight. Let them publicly donate a bunch of money to what is presumably a small niche cause that will make a huge difference in gamers' lives.
Yeah, so the theme of this episode is getting corporations to fight.
Yep. just throw a knife in between them. Oh, man. I've got to go, you guys. How do you feel about buttoning it up?
Button.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate it. If you're listening, you know what you can do. Ratings, reviews, Patreon, all of that. Dennis, what is the URL people can go to get notified about Deck of Wonders?
Yeah, bit.ly/DOW Kickstarter.
Yeah, and watch for that to go live on August the 25th. That is this coming Tuesday. Be sure to help the campaign meet its 48-hour goal.
Yeah, everyone gets the full digital art book.
Yeah, everybody wins. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think here. Nope, I would rather do a shorter admin here. Am I forgetting anything?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you so much, everybody. I've been Cole Ross. You can follow my tweets at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Deck of Wonders on Twitter with underscores between the words.
I'm David Meismith, just David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel. Just Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
So I have a number of them.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
I had Ivan Drago training droid.
I have Ivan Drago's dentist.
Also good.
Okay.
I had Byman soup fan. I had kill a ton of people for free.
Okay.
I have that doesn't imply it states.
Okay.
This is too long, but I still liked it.
Okay, fair enough.
Every boom of the boomstick in Whoville.
So I have that stylized as Whoville boomstick.
Also good.
Yeah.
And then I had how the Grinch took Christmas back.
Okay. Yeah.
I had that as well. I like Whoville Boomstick.
Okay.
As the kind of combine all those together into that. I had Dental Snitch.
Okay.
From way early. Commit to the Hot Dog.
Okay.
I had Not Estes. Then, you know, How the Grinch Took Christmas Back, which is the Whoville Boomstick. And then I also had 4-inch Wiffle Ball.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I realized once I thought of the context of that, there was nothing dirty about 4-inch with wiffle ball. I
mean, it's one of those things that sounds dirty. Sound right. It sounds dirty-ish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have Bicentennial Man. I have Bicentennial Man, which is what you say. Yeah, when you're a centennial man who becomes a bicentennial man.
Oh,
and
okay, bye-centennial man. Okay, yeah.
And then I have bison 10 out of tenial man.
Oh, God. Okay,
that's it.
Okay, I had Ivan Drago's dentist and Whoville Boomstick. So Whoville Boomstick takes it by votes. I would like to throw in a dark horse here for kill a ton of people for free.
too dark. I think we gotta go Whoville Boomstick.
Okay. All right.
Though, do we want to consider one of the bicentennial men?
So I laughed very hard at just calling it Bicentennial Man. literally just the name of the movie. BYE Centennial Man is also funny to me. Bicentennial Man is fucking inscrutable, as is Bi-Man Soup Fan. I feel like we've done a couple of those like expert level titles. Okay, so let's put it up between Whoville Boomstick and Bicentennial Man. what do we want it to be? I prefer Whoville Boomstick.
I'm abstaining.
Yeah, I'm abstaining. Let's do.
I'm still on Whoville Boomstick.
Okay, all right. Cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna go. I've got to go to bed so I can get to the dentist.
Yeah, went late, but that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Take care. Guys. Have a good day.
Have a good week.
Yep.
Bye. Definitely.
Bye. Peace.